No.
No.
I want to highlight this.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we talk about the HBO television program True Detective, which has a strong atheist character and all sorts of creepy shit.
We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Tim Wick.
I am certain that I am Tim Wick.
And Molly Glover.
I think I'm Molly Glover.
I'm pretty sure.
Nice.
And
it's just that you didn't seem so certain who you were.
I'm pretty certain.
Okay. All right.
But if there was any question about it, it would make sense because we're talking about True Detective.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of questions.
And there's a lot of confusion. A lot of existential. Shit going down.
I mean, like, why are we even here? You know, man. Like,
time is a flat circle.
So,
we've talked about True Detective a little bit before. We've mentioned it casually, I think.
Yeah.
But it's a show on HBO. It's done in like a mini series, one season for one long story format, and we're gonna spoil the shit out of it.
Yeah.
So, if you haven't seen True Detective, it's great. Matthew McConaughey, Woody Harrelson. McConaughey plays a wonderful atheist character, and it's a gruesome murder mystery that takes place in Louisiana. So you've been warned. If you don't want it spoiled, you want to go watch it, pause, go torrent it, or buy it legally through iTunes. While you're there, rate us, and then come back and finish listening.
Can you watch it on, like, HBO, whatever?
Go.
The HBO.
Yeah. HBO Go, yeah. But if you're an HBO subscriber.
If you are, you can watch it on, and you probably already have. Because everybody's told you you should.
It was a fucking great show.
And you listened to them, and you went and watched it.
So, can I Rust Cole is my new favorite atheist character.
Yeah.
And has been since we started watching the show. And I have a quote that I really want to read from him.
All right, real quick.
It's just...
Is this when they're outside the evangelical tent?
Yes.
Okay.
Did you already have that one?
Nope.
Okay. So he says, if the only thing keeping a person decent is the expectation of divine reward, then brother, that person is a piece of shit. And I'd like to get as many of them out in the open as possible. You gotta get together and tell yourself stories that violate every law of the universe just to get through the goddamn day. What's that say about your reality? Which I love because it's this, you know, right from the start, he's very nihilistic.
Antagonistic about it.
He talks about humanity as essentially being a mistake.
He literally says it's a mistake. Yeah, cosmic error.
Talks about us as very predatory, very dangerous animals. He doesn't have a very high opinion on existence, yet at the same time, he's a police officer who's trying to, like, what does he say? We're bad men, but the world needs bad men to keep the other bad men at bay.
From the door. We keep the other bad men from the door. Yep. Like, so they're bad men, but they're on the side of the line.
He's a self-loathing motherfucker.
But to be fair, he loathes everybody. It's not just himself. He loathes the human species entirely.
At least
he says he does, and certainly there's depth to the character beyond what he says, and there's a lot of pain behind that.
Because his wife, they lost their little girl.
Yep.
She was, what, like 3, 6, something?
I don't remember if he said the age.
I thought 6, but...
She was young, and she died, and she got hit by a car, I think. There was an accident.
Their marriage didn't survive it.
And he just... He cracks, and he gets... Because the show is told on 3 timelines... In a series of flashbacks and forwards and cuts, it can be difficult to track. But he after that happened, after that happened, he went undercover with a bunch of meth addicts and stuff to be a meth dealer, and then he went crazy because of the meth and also the grief, and then he was in an asylum for 4 years, and then they let him out of that. And so, like, there was this weird, like, there's this weird floating timeline where he was in an institution for a while, and the drugs he'd been taking, he'd been taking a lot of psychedelics, and he was having flashbacks.
He doesn't sleep a lot or dream very often.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because of drugs.
He's a fucked up character.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, he is damaged.
But at the same time, he is remarkably intelligent, observant, and a brilliant detective.
Yes.
He's the only person in the show who really has any idea the extent of what's going on.
Yeah.
I think his partner is Woody Harrelson's character, Marty Hart.
Martin Hart.
And Marty is kind of a six-pack Joe, but I think he's a good cop, too.
Mm-hmm.
Once Rust brings him around to see the things that are very well hidden, that aren't obvious, Hart is a good cop. I mean, he has breakthroughs.
He is a good cop who's lost his way.
He's got deep steel under a layer of laziness and wanting just to get along. And he is a man of I would say, vague morality. He has this idea that he's supposed to be good. He has this idea of what it is to be a good husband and a good father, but he's not.
He's either. Not a good husband. He's not a good husband.
He cheats on his wife. He's not a good father because he's not around ever.
Bit of an alcoholic.
He is an alcoholic. He's not, you know, he's not like as bad as Rust gets later, but yeah, he is an alcoholic.
He's an angry, shit-fucking father.
He's an asshole drunk.
I forgot all about his oldest daughter.
Yeah. He fucks up his family real bad. Like he
treats his wife like crap.
Marty is, you know, watching this show, it was like Marty was the character I disliked the most.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the more you learn about him,
yeah,
because you know what they do is in the first episode they set up that Russ is kind of a nut and nihilistic,
real fucked
as
up
fuck,
about his daughter,
jackass,
and just seems like a real asshole. And you realize no, Marty is. Compared to Rust, Marty seems like a pretty okay guy. And as this series goes on, and there
it's purely superficial.
There is something in this series, you know, the way you start to learn about all these characters really starts to support Rust's perspective.
Yeah.
Humans are really fucked up.
Well, and I think it also supports the overarching plot of... on its surface, this just looks like a couple murders. And then if you get a little further, it looks like a bunch of murders that might be related. But the more you learn and the deeper you get, you see this really ugliness underneath all this stuff that's been in this town. And I think that's what you get with Marty. And the thing is, Rust just sees that in people immediately. He doesn't get tricked by the pleasantries on the surface. And I think that's part of why he drinks, he has an unfortunately incisive mind. Mm-hmm. And it's the same reason Sherlock Holmes took opium and heroin and all that.
When
you're that insightful, you don't have those pleasant fogs to keep you buoyed.
He sees the ugliness in everyone.
Mm-hmm. And everything.
It's kind of based on a true series of murders.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is it the Louisiana Satanist murders? Is that what it's...
Yeah, I don't remember if that's exactly what it was called, but it was... It was something where
it was Louisiana, I think?
It was Louisiana. Yeah. I can look it up, but...
So it was a series of murders that had some police and political involvement, kind of some sort of fraternal order.
There was a cult aspect. There was weird, like they would just call it weird cult shit done to the bodies, like there was in this, you know?
Wood sculptures, weird tree hanging
things. Those bird traps were actually from, I think, the case, and that was one of those things that they moved into
it. Carried over.
Yeah. Now, I mean, I'll say the show it's creepy as fuck. Because you can tell there's real sinister stuff going on.
Well, they talk about the King in Yellow,
the Yellow King, they say.
Or the Yellow King,
right. Yeah, they call it the Yellow King. Carcosa. Carcosa, the Yellow King, which is all Lovecraft, the King in Yellow, and
precedes Lovecraft, even, I think.
Well, there's the poem that precedes Lovecraft was they were all kind of working together. It's hard to say,
The King in Yellow, or compared to the Yellow King, predates Lovecraft as well. I think he wasn't the first to use that.
No, he wasn't. They all happened at the same time. Like working writing around the same time. Like they were friends. Like all the people. Yeah. But the something that was interesting. Did you find yourself? Now you binge watched it. I'm guessing
I binge watched it. That's my
right.
Well, we watched the episodes came out.
And there was a sub. I mean, there's a subreddit on Reddit. It's still there. I unsub, but it's True Detective, and there was so much fun. I found it fun and crazy speculation about what it all means, and like people taking and the irony being okay. So the irony of this: these people obsessing over details and trying to predict, and like there was a black star on this thing here, and there's black stars tattoo on this person and this, and what? How could that be connected? So the play "The King in Yellow" is about a play that when people see it, it makes them insane, and they become unwitting acolytes of the Deep One that inspired the play. And causes madness. So the when they see The King in Yellow, the play, it makes them crazy, which is funny because these people, I mean, there are people that were really spending a lot of time and a lot of like effort and mental whatever, like focusing on how to find the answers to this. It was neat, but a lot of it didn't pan out. Like most of it didn't pan out and didn't have. There wasn't.
Yeah, if. And maybe we're skipping ahead before we should. If I had any disappointment about this series, it's that I felt the conclusion was fairly banal.
Yeah.
A bit.
It was like, in the end, it was the same kind of thing of the two cops going in. Nick is just sneezing the fuck out.
I know. It's
all right. Oh, my God. That was a spray.
Sorry. It's the...
It's okay. Paper.
It's okay.
So... Because it ends with the two cops going in as it does in so many stories like this, with our two main characters going in alone to try and stop the person that we've finally identified as the big bad, and having to have a big confrontation where he's clearly got the upper hand, and
that didn't bother me as much as the what I felt the uncharacteristic change for Rust. At the end there, because he almost dies, or he does, or he comes back.
He has a
near death experience. Light.
Yeah, right. He sees his daughter. Yeah. He feels this sense of warmth and peace, and
she's okay.
And she's okay. And he just knows that he does. I will say he does say like he doesn't know if there's anything after this. He's not saying that he saw heaven. He's just saying as he was about to die, he felt an overwhelming peace. And love and calm, and for the first time in his life. And I actually, so like, I was okay with that. Like, that wasn't so bad. But I don't know, man, something about the way that it was shot, maybe it was directed better. Maybe,
you know, but the thing, and I'm going to disagree with you a little bit, even though that bothered me too. And I question whether or not this atheist character had suddenly started to find some sort of spirituality. But one thing that what he was really saying was, For the first time in I don't know how long, he had been happy. He was talking about the fact that he would rather have died.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He almost kills himself in the show. He almost commits suicide.
Oh, yeah. But this is...
But this is at the end. In the hospital, and he doesn't... And so what he's saying is that he lived... But he should have been dead, and even that he wanted to be dead, and that at that moment where he was about to die, he felt more at peace than he had felt in, you assume, since his daughter had been killed.
And I think to me, that's why I'm saying, like, I feel like with better direction or editing, or maybe even just a little bit of a different write or take on it, it wouldn't have felt the way it felt, which, I mean, a lot of people agreed online, at least, that it was like, guys, I saw it and it was okay. Everything's okay after we die, and there is love.
He saw the light.
It felt very Jesus-y, or at least heaven-y, or you know.
And I wonder about that because McConaughey and Harrelson were both executive producers on the show. And McConaughey won the Oscar this year, and in his Oscar speech, he talked about how he believes in God.
Like, whoa.
Like he talked about it a lot.
He did. And how
super douchey way.
Yeah.
And how important God was to his life, and how God brought him to this point, and how and I don't think that God ever gave anybody an Oscar, but that's not the point.
Least of all Matthew McConaughey.
But he's a great actor. I mean,
I just mean, like, if God was gonna pick somebody, I doubt McConaughey is his favorite.
Yeah.
He got arrested for like all sorts of
shenanigans.
Why the
hell didn't he give it to Charlton Heston? What the fuck? Anyway, the thing is that actually I think you won one. But anyway. The thing is that I wonder if McConaughey's spirit religion had any impact. Mm. I mean, certainly he wasn't the creator of the show, and I mean, I believe that the creator of the show has his own voice, and I doubt McConaughey would have... I doubt that McConaughey would have pushed him in that direction, but it's possible that McConaughey was drawn to play an atheist character because of that seeming shift in his spirituality at the very
end. Assuming the whole thing was written when they decided to do it. I don't know how much was written when they started filming.
Yeah.
But I could see that.
One of the TV review guys for the Daily Beast wrote something that I found that I wanted to read. It said that in the earliest episodes of True Detective, Pizzolatto, the writer and director of the show, established a clear dichotomy. On one hand, there's investigation, storytelling as a search for the truth. And on the other hand, there's religion, storytelling as an escape from the truth.
Hmm.
And they're two kinds of narrative.
Yeah.
And one is a narrative that seeks the truth, and the other one is a narrative that runs from the truth.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's definitely a really big part of at least the first half of the show.
Well, for sure. And the idea that Rust seeks the truth, and Marty definitely runs from the truth. And not because he is a, God-fearing man, but because he's Marty Hart. He runs from all of it. And he, the thing is, what convinced me that Marty was a shit, because as much as I hate people who cheat on their spouses, and instantly that villainizes a character for me, because I have it's very difficult for me to be sympathetic about someone who's cheating on a spouse.
Because a relationship is a contract, and you set up the parameters of that contract at the beginning. If you want to be poly, that's fine.
Sure.
You create those parameters when you start the relationship.
And then,
you don't go, well, being married isn't really for me, so I'm going to change the parameters, but I'm not going to tell my partner that the parameters
have changed. Exactly. And not only that, but then there's always that whole I'm so tortured, and this is really hard, and I'm really having emotional struggles, and I'm I have no sympathy.
Yeah.
But with so that, I was fuck you, Marty, cheat on your wife. But then it was when the girlfriend on the side tried to have her own life and wanted to go out and had other dates and was like, this is just we're having fun. You're married. I have fun with lots.
And you're not gonna leave your wife. You
made
that clear.
Yeah, I have fun with lots of guys, and him being I want you here all day. I want you chained to this bed. And he freaks out and beats the shit out of a guy that she dates.
Yeah. She is in public with her date, and he is in public with his family.
Yeah.
And he confronts her off in secret.
Yeah.
And
not even in secret, just at the bar.
Just blows up at her.
He's a fucking asshole.
Oh, yeah.
He is.
And, and as much as I disliked him then, it was actually what really pushed him over the edge. And he got a bit of a redemption at the end that I didn't feel he earned, quite frankly. What pushed him over the edge for me is there's a point where his daughter, his rebellious teenage daughter, because that never happens, is caught having sex with a couple of 19-year-olds,
and she's 15 or 16 or something. Yeah.
And she told him that she was 18 and whatever, and
she's telling her dad specifically, Dad, no, I wanted to do this. I was not it wasn't against my will.
And he has them arrested, and he goes to the jail, and he beats the shit out of them.
Yeah.
Worse than that, he says, oh, look at that. The cell door's open. Huh. Anyone could just walk out. And then he says, you got two options. You can stay in this cage, and I will use every bit of influence I have as a detective to make sure that for the rest of your life, you're marked as a sex offender.
Yep.
Or you can walk out of this cell now,
And I'll beat your licks.
He strongly implies that, and then I will beat the shit out of you, and then you can go without being charged.
Yep.
And one of the kids walks out, and he beats the fucking shit out of this, 19-year-old kid.
And honestly, here's what I would do. We talked about it, because we will often pause and be like, here's what I would do in this.
Yeah.
And it's I would absolutely walk out of that cell, get the crap beat out of me, and then I would go to the other police. Because, that's physical evidence of being attacked in custody. They've got your picture before custody. They have your mugshot from when you got arrested. And now they have this picture of you only having ever been in police custody. Yeah. So that, but at the same time, like, yeah, fuck Marty Hart. Like, yeah.
And so at the end, you get this feeling that there's maybe some sort of reconciliation with his family.
Because he cries and says he misses
him. And it's just like, he has not redeemed himself at all.
No.
At this point, he's just as bad a fuck as he was before. And so to me,
his time.
Yeah, to me, it was like, I don't want to see him have a teary reconciliation with his family, because he's done nothing to earn that.
And the reason that did work for me is because of this overarching theme that time is a flat circle, and that everything that you do it, you know, Russ says it early on. He says, time is a flat circle. That's when they rescue the girl and the boy that's been chained to her bed. Uh-huh. And they bring him out, and he says, you know, time is a flat circle. You know, someone once told me time is a flat circle. Everything we do, you know, we're just running around. And when we, you know, someone will do this, and they'll kill, and then we'll chase them, and then we'll catch them, you know, or we won't. And someone, I know, he's like, then that little boy and that little girl are just going to be in that room over and over until the end of eternity. And it's like, it's super nihilistic, but that theme gets echoed a lot in that this is the case they're doing at first, and then you come back to them, and it's been 12 years, and the case has come up again, and then you're back to the very, and then they go to the very, you know, the present day, and then these two fucking suck, the two cops, they're investigating murders that are similar, and like,
the fact that they referred to them as fucking suck once, for the rest of the season, Molly and I are like, well, no, what about fucking suck?
What about fucking suck?
Like,
that's, cops.
Like,
yeah,
just,
yeah.
That became their name, like, yeah.
But the, and so that to me, you know, Marty's wife taking him back, you know, them doing this all fucking again, knowing he's probably going to cheat on her again,
and
or at least get drunk, you know, and
he does.
At the end of the end of the entire series, when there's that implication that maybe she's going to take him back again.
And that's why that's the reason that I didn't hate that. The things I hated are that seemed to be breaking out of that, and I think because it felt like they're establishing a pattern, and so that's why I think the thing with Rust. Him feeling like when he says, you know, I think maybe the light is winning. That's where it was like, I've never been almost dead, so maybe I can't speak to it. And if you listeners have been almost dead and you had a change of something in your brain, let me know. But like, how do you go from that ultimate complete nihilism that he, by his own admission, had his whole life?
Yeah.
It just got amplified and made far worse by his daughter's death and the alcoholism. It was just more of a, it'd be like if someone you know who's like maybe, like a argumentative, abrasive dude. Like if like his wife dies and now he's just like fucking insufferable. Like it's So how does that fundamental change happen just because you almost died? That bothered me.
So the good guys win. Maybe I mean like that could
to
be
me,
a part of
that
it.
That to me is where he was coming from. Is like they it took them. I mean, a long time. This show covers like. Almost 20 years.
He goes into Jesus himself. I mean, he goes in like self-sacrificing, like
suicide by psycho.
Yeah,
yeah. It takes all this time, but they actually manage to catch the guy. And that to me was what he was saying there. He was saying,
at least one of them.
He was saying, we made progress.
Yeah,
well,
that's true.
Because the whole conspiracy. Doesn't get caught.
Right.
The one guy gets caught.
Just the one.
But like all the bigger people involved aren't. They don't go down.
No. They talk. They talk about the fact that they have a lot of evidence. And
okay.
And they might be able to move forward. It's very open. And
but it's not like
everything's happy. Kind
right.
Because I mean, like it's like a governor or something, and like a big religious influential guy, and like a bunch of cops. I mean.
I found it, and I read an article that said this, and I didn't realize I thought it. And you know how sometimes you don't realize you had an opinion until you kind of read it, and you're like, oh, yeah, actually. And they were saying that they were very disappointed that, you know, after all this, you know, skullduggery and interesting and intrigue and mystery, and then you find out that it's the dude... the spaghetti monster is Errol, is this you know, this fucking, you know, mongrel dude that's the groundskeeper, which is great. That's a great thing. Yeah. But then to find out that, of course, he lives in a stereotypical, like, white trash garbage
psycho house
full of clutter and dirt, and he fucks his sister, and his dad, his dead dad's corpse is chained to the bed, and all
that
this weird
shit.
The
accent thing was so weird.
The accent thing made sense to me.
He's
grown up watching television, and someone was positing, it was Pizzoletto was saying, I wanted it to be like, that's what he does, that's his, like, comfort kind of thing, like, that's just what he used to do. You know, he would mock my accents on TV, and maybe he looked up to the classier ones, because that was, you know, a life
he had. Yeah, you just want to, I don't know what I wanted to see from him, but I mean, here's a guy who's been getting away with kidnapping and murdering
people. Clearly brilliant.
For 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, all these events that are linked, but the cops can never manage to connect them all to
Arkin's particular conspiracy to hide it.
Think about how much work Rust has to do to find other cases that are linked to the one case that they start with.
Yeah.
And that nobody has ever been able to link together before. And as soon as Rust leaves the force, it stops again.
There's people, and it's not just incompetence, but I'm sure, I mean, there's definitely that as well. There are forces actively working to obfuscate that.
And I feel like, I can think of a handful of ways they could have made that character more interesting and less cliche right in that moment, showing the house. Like, for example, what if when we see him, he's in his house, and like where he lives in the house is neat and clean and seems, you know, maybe not like fancy because he's obviously not rich, but at least it's well kept.
Yeah.
And he's well kept. And then like if there's like you realize that when he comes out, he changes his, you know, so that he becomes this kind of dirty, shambling janitor character.
Facade.
Yeah, which is, you know, there's a character in a Stephen King book who does that. When he begs for change, he pretends to be blind, and he's this whole other outfit thing that he does. You know, it's.
So, there's those existential stuff, philosophical parts. There's a murder mystery detective aspect. I just gotta say, but also, there's this really, really fantastic action sequence where Rust is back undercover.
Oh, yeah, the one shot?
The one shot?
Holy fuck. It was like halfway through that scene, I realized it was all the same shot.
Yeah.
It's like a 7-minute shot or something like that.
It's incredible. Yeah.
It's all one shot. It's an incredibly high action sequence.
I think it's the end of episode 3.
It's,
or episode
like that.
4. It's right in the middle.
It's so amazing and so well directed, and just the choreographed staging thing. Because the scale, it starts out so personal, and by the end of this action scene, they're actually zoomed out, and there are like cops driving down one block and them escaping down the other way, and you can see a whole bunch happening, almost like a map.
Yeah.
And you realize how, because it is personal. It's focused in on Rust for most of it.
Yeah.
And you see him going through this neighborhood and trying to get away from the situation. And you don't really understand what's going on. And then it pulls back and you're like, oh, now I get all of the geography of what
it is. A little cluttered
and confusing. You hear they're narrating what happened because they're telling fucking suck.
They're telling a lie.
They're telling fucking suck what happened, but it's a lie.
Yeah.
So what you're hearing, the words they're saying are not what's happening in the shot.
Yeah.
So it's disconcerting at first because you're like, the fuck is going on? And then you start to realize that they are showing them in separate interviews telling the identical lie while they show what actually happened.
And again, there's that dichotomy. The real truth, the real thing happening, and then the fake thing.
The thing that's easier to believe because that's the story, that's the easier thing. That's the gentler thing.
I love that.
Yeah, it's really well done.
So when you get to the point where the fucking suck are like saying that they think the rust is yeah. the killer.
Yeah.
It's like you can buy it because you've seen what they've done is they've shown Rust telling a story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they show you what really happened. So we understand he's yeah. an unreliable narrator.
Yep. Yep.
And we understand that the filming of the show is going to show us what actually happened.
Yeah. Yeah. What we're seeing with our eyes is the truth, which again reinforces the anti-religious themes, is that you can't trust what anyone tells you. You right. can only trust what you see with your own eyes, and that's amazing.
So yeah. and so we got to get to five questions, but I mean, we didn't even touch on stuff like the Barbies in a circle, the flower yeah. crown on his daughter, like
Black there's Star,
there's
the
all
antlers,
these like red
traps.
Herring dead end conspiracy theory like visual cues that tie like Marty's family to the conspiracy
the
and all that.
Beer can man.
Beer can man. Yep. All yep. that, man. There's some crazy awesome internet theories, and they're worth reading after you watch the show.
It's an excellent show.
It's
and if you haven't seen it and we just spoiled the shit out of it for you, believe me, there's a whole lot of the show
watching.
To watch.
I promise that if you, like, after this episode, if you give it a week or two, you won't remember anything we said, and you can go watch it and be like, you might be like, oh, I think they said something about that, but you're not going to remember. So yeah. just do yourself a favor and watch it. It's fantastic.
Mackay sure. and Harrelson, absolutely amazing.
I think it's a rebirth. I think HBO is really right now ushering in a rebirth of television, like acting and getting big names attached to full-length yeah. dramas.
Well, and next season, all new detectives takes place in California but not LA, and who's the
Jessica Chastain has been rumored to play the lead,
but
so.
Totally different story.
She was lead in Zero Dark 30, if you right. don't know
yes.
who Jessica
yep.
Chastain
yep.
is, just for you listeners out there. All right, five questions. Should I ask the first
yeah go
one?
For it
all
Tim.
Right. Question number one, what's the best oh sorry why don't you tell us who we're answering getting a question
oh right
we have listener from. Eric Tater, who says, I've only just discovered your podcast. As is usual for me, you guys were introduced to me through your appearance in another podcast, but I forget which one. I just wanted to add this disclaimer in case you've heard these before. I love the show.
Sweet. Okay. So question number one, what is the best movie that you have seen in the last 30 days?
The Sunset Limited. I'm guessing it originally meant to be a play, but I viewed it on HBO recently, and it stars Samuel L. Jackson and Tommy Lee Jones. Huh. It is just awesome. Two guys alone in a room for the movie. Great writing, great acting, and religion is a big topic. So I have to tell you, this is funny. It says Sam, parentheses black, is the preacher, and Tommy, parentheses white, is the non-believer. Oh, black, white are the character names given. I just like that it was trying to help me remember which one was which one. Right. No, which one's Tommy Lee Jones?
I always get
like,
Tommy Lee Jones and Samuel L. Jackson confused.
Anyway, it's written by Cormac McCarthy.
Oh,
it's very
awesome.
Cutting
sure.
edge.
Yeah. Right.
I'm sure it's super depressing. I haven't heard of that one. Sounds very interesting.
Yeah.
So,
I haven't heard about it at all. Question number two, who is your favorite atheist character?
I thought about going with White, but since I already brought that up in the last answer, I'll go with Raymond Ray Stantz. In case that doesn't ring a bell, he was Dan Aykroyd's character in Ghostbusters. Mm. Geeky college scientist who had to give it all up and go in business for himself. My only evidence for his atheism is his conversation with the black guy in the Ghostmobile. He asks Ray if he believes in God, and his reply, never met him. Good enough for me.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like, I haven't seen any proof.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, he's a scientist, you know, like ghosts and stuff, but that's not God.
And when Ray is asked, are you a God, he says no.
Because
of course he's not God.
Well, and I mean, of course he can be an atheist and believe in ghosts. He can see ghosts.
Yeah,
they're literally fucking up New York, Nick.
So question number three, what's your geekiest hobby?
I don't really have any right now, but I think I had a big one in my 20s. I used to play the board game Risk by myself quite a bit.
Oh,
I would shuffle the cards into three teams to set up and compete against each other. I would promise myself that I would play each team with the utmost of integrity. I can still see myself struggling not to root for one color over the other. I would try to come up with the absolute best strategies to win the game. FYI, I love starting with Australia and working out from there, and also I want to add Europe sucks.
He doesn't mean in Risk. He means just
if you have an iPad, they do have a Risk app that you can download, and you can play
by yourself.
Like, you
with
can
AI.
Play, yeah. With the, you could play with the AI, or you could create three different human players and no computer player.
That, you could get back into your geeky hobby.
Yeah,
man. Since I can't remember who we had on the podcast that recommended Lords of Waterdeep.
Oh, it was Brienne.
Yeah, it was Brienne.
Oh, Brienne.
It was Brienne Beaulieu.
I've been playing that on my iPad, and it is in Risk, if the resources you're managing are the little soldiers you put out, Lords of Waterdeep has adventurers that you send out to get you more resources. Yeah, it's you might like it.
Hack mentioned the iPad.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But Brienne was the one who first brought it up, and I have played a shit ton of Lords of Waterdeep. It's a great game.
Question number four, what's your favorite sandwich?
If this counts as a sandwich, I have to go with a cheeseburger from Five Guys.
But it's got bread and shit in the middle.
It's a burger chain that I believe began in the D.C. area and is now in my upstate New York home, thank God. We have them here, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. I would kill babies for this thing. I get it with ketchup and mustard, but once in a while I go with mayo, lettuce, and tomato. I know a lot of places do a good burger, but this one's on another planet. Lots of crispy areas, always done to perfection. I don't even need fries or a drink with it. Call me boring, but that's the way I roll.
You know what? I got to tell you, there's an app on Facebook just today, which is like, what weird food day is your birthday?
Yeah.
And it turns out my birthday is cheeseburger day. So.
Gotta try Five Guys if you haven't.
I haven't been.
It's super greasy.
There's not a Five Guys near our house. We usually go to Smashburger, which we really like.
It's so much better than Smashburger. Right, I can't even tell you. I like Smashburger too.
Here's your paper sack that you can see through because of all the grease.
Wow.
Peanut. It's like a peanut bar. There's peanuts to crack open.
We have Learn, Eat, and Pray. Next time we come out, wherever out our way, we'll go there.
Next time we go to Grace Mega Church.
Yeah.
All right, question number five. What's the stupidest thing anybody has ever said to you about your atheism?
I've always been a very laissez-faire atheist.
Hey.
You want me to go to midnight mass with you? Fine. Of course, I was trying to get laid when I accepted. You want me to be your kid's godfather? Really? Whatever. But the biggest conflict I had was when my mother and grandmother wanted me to get married in the family church, which would have been okay, but there was the added bonus of having to undergo counseling with the pastor.
Oh.
After sugarcoating most of our answers and playing along with semi-good intentions, the pastor discovered that we weren't that religious. He called us good people, but we were really just, quote, charming pagans, unquote. Wow.
That's pretty insulting.
Yeah, that is super insulting. Well, Eric, thank you so much for writing in your five questions.
Yeah.
That was great.
Absolutely. And if you guys want to send in your answers to our five questions, you can send them to 5questions@geekswithoutgod.com.
I think we're running a little thin.
When did he send those in? Do you know?
He sent those in February 13th.
Oh, wow. We're catching up.
We currently have like 8 or 9.
Oh, okay.
In the hopper, so.
Sure, so you're only, you know, maybe 10 behind if you send your answers in now. If you have, like, a favorite scene or a fan theory or something about True Detective, feel free to leave it as a comment either on our Facebook page or at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter as well. We're at geekswithoutgod. Otherwise, rate us on iTunes, please. And we'll see you next Tuesday. Religion is a language virus that rewrites the pathways in the brain and dulls critical thinking.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Blah, 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 blah. Okay.